Hello, this is Lois Reitzes. Welcome to City Lights, a celebration of the infinite ways in which people express themselves creatively through music, dance, food, the written word, visual art, theater, and more. About 4 hours southwest of Atlanta sits a little town whose name might not ring any bells, though millions have been transported there and have imagined climbing upon its porches and playing beneath its lush canopy. Monroeville, Alabama, population 6,289, is known worldwide as the fictional town of Macomb, the hometown of author Harper Lee. Images of Monroeville saturate Lee's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. From the opening lines, the story and Monroeville, or Macomb, are commingled. Macomb was an old town, but it was a tired old town when I first knew it. In rainy weather, the streets turned to red slop. Grass grew on the sidewalks. The courthouse sagged in the square. Somehow, it was hotter then. A black dog suffered on a summer's day. Bony mules hitched to Hoover carts flicked flies in the sweltering shade of the live oaks on the square. Men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning. Ladies bathed before noon, after 3 o'clock naps, and by nightfall were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. Author Maria Mills lived beside Harper Lee and her sister Alice and wrote about the experience. Mockingbirds are a fairly common sight around Monroeville, but to have one join us in Harper Lee's yard was a bit of magic. Mockingbirds sing loudly and don't take kindly to other birds infringing on their territory. There's something strong, but also vulnerable about mockingbirds. Those qualities applied to the one in the tree, as well as the ones living in the house. Maria Mills is my guest in the studio this morning. We'll talk about her memoir, The Mockingbird Next Door, and more today on City Lights. It's one thing to be a fly on the wall, but our guest occupied an even better vantage point. Maya Mills lived next door to one of the literary giants of the 20th century. She chronicled that experience in her memoir, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. Maria Mills, welcome to City Lights.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for coming in advance of your appearance tonight at the Carter Center. First, tell us about your relationship with the author of To Kill a Mockingbird. How did it all begin?
I have the Chicago Library System to thank in part for that. In 2001, the library system chose To Kill a Mockingbird for its first ever One Book, One Chicago program. My editor came to my desk in the Chicago Tribune one day, and I was a feature writer, and said, do you want to take a trip? Usually the smart answer to that is, where to? And then an answer. But I like to travel for stories. And I said, sure. And then I said, where to? And he said, Monroeville, Alabama. Saw my quizzical look and explained that was Harper Lee's hometown. And then I understood why I was being sent there. We knew that she, of course, was famously private, as was her sister, Alice Finchley, a lawyer who handled many of her affairs and whom Harper Lee called Atticus in a skirt, which she most certainly was. And so I met them when I went down to do research for this story. I had written Alice to let her know that I would be coming to town and why. and knocked on their door, modest red brick house on a quiet street in Monroeville, shortly before I would have returned, not expecting her to answer the door. But a wisp of a woman came to the door and invited me in, and that was Alice Lee. We had the first of what would be many conversations about their life in that town, what it meant to have the press of interest in the book all those years later, good and bad, more about their parents and their grandparents and their upbringing. And then I was surprised soon after when my phone rang. At the Best Western Motel, where I was staying on the outskirts of town.
Only the best.
And I heard a husky voice identify herself as Harper Lee.
Oh, my God. Now, what was your reaction?
Well, it was as if the Wizard of Oz had called and said, I wonder if we might meet. She said that I had made an impression on Miss Alice, and she wanted to see about getting together, which we did the following day. She knocked on the door to that motel room at the appointed hour and was down to earth from the start. I, of course, wasn't sure what to expect. Mm-hmm. So little had been known.
Tell us more about those first impressions.
Well, I remember she was dressed quite simply. I think she and Alice were people who spent a whole lot of time thinking and talking about books and very little time on material things for the most part, lived quite simply, dressed quite simply. She was interested in knowing more about whom I had talked to around town and what they'd had to say. And for me, I think that was an early glimpse at how unnerving it could be to be her, to be so loved and yet to have little known about you, and to know there are reporters and readers and others coming through that small town regularly, that town that is, as she says, 100 miles from anywhere. You have to want to go there. And shortly into our conversation, we were talking about the library's activities surrounding To Kill a Mockingbird, and I mentioned that I had enjoyed Gregory Peck's comments about the making of the film. He, of course, won an Oscar for his role as Atticus Finch, the widowed lawyer in the story. And at the mention of his name, I remember her eyes just danced, and she said, "Isn't he delicious?"
Oh, yes, he was, and in that role especially.
And it was heartwarming to me to know that the filming was the beginning of a lifelong friendship for her, not only with Gregory Peck and his wife Veronique and children, but with Horton Foote, for example, the Texas playwright who adapted the novel for the screen, and others involved.
No slouch himself. And yet, there was no sense of competition or rivalry. She was thrilled when Horton Foote agreed to adapt the story.
She was, and he said, you know, I'm open to your suggestions here, essentially. But she said, no, I'm going to leave you to do this on your own. He said that although he was from Texas and not Alabama, he felt almost as if they were cousins from the beginning, and that she had captured something about his hometown, too, in Texas. And so he was able to write with deep feeling about that kind of place, to adapt with that kind of deep feeling.
A small town southern sensibility. Speaking with Maria Mills, author of The Mockingbird Next Door, you're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. We'll be back in a moment. Fabulous music is from Elmer Bernstein's score to the film version of To Kill a Mockingbird. You're talking with author Maria Mills, her memoir about life and observations of Harper Lee and her circle. You mentioned a moment ago about how simple the Lee sisters were in their taste and clothes, no need for lavish surroundings. It was very heartening to read about her circle of friends, their circle of friends in your book, because it shows how little use they had for status. I mean, Gregory Peck and his wife occupied the same closeness as a 30-year hairdresser.
It was an eclectic circle.
And in that crowd area,
of course, that crowd, as you say, Nell took a kind of wry delight, I think, that one of the socially prominent women in that town had referred to this eclectic bunch of friends with whom she did things as that crowd. And that reflected them, I think. They had many friends from the Methodist Church with which they were involved, but Baptists and others as well, and white collar and blue collar and people of all sorts of different backgrounds.
Now, you were born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin.
I was.
Lived in Chicago for many years, Pulitzer Prize winning reporter for the Chicago Tribune. You must have felt like you descended in another world, another planet, when you landed in Monroeville.
We had fun, I have to say, with some of the expressions that I was learning. And Nell taught me one of my favorite expressions. Nell Harper Lee being her birth name. And her sister always called her Nell Harper. She was Nell to most of her friends. And Harper Lee, of course, as an author, and I always thought that was fitting for her because she did keep those lives somewhat distinct. So where were we on?
Well, you didn't have much exposure
to
Southerners, and here you landed in a place steeped in Southern tradition, and I was hoping you would tell us about some of the lessons you learned about small-town Southern life.
Well, I will do that, and one just on the level of language that I still think about, I thought about it last night, was an expression Nell Harper taught me called journey proud, and that was an old-time expression that referred to the mix of nervousness and excitement the night before a person undertook a trip that made it hard to sleep. And she talked about being journey proud the night before she was to take the train back to New York, which is something she had done for so many years. Spent time in New York where she had a small apartment and then in Monroeville sharing that home with Alice. And two such different existences. In Monroeville, a lot of their routines centered around getting Alice to and from the law office every day. She was still practicing in her 90s when I was there. And Nell would get behind the wheel of her Buick and just say, "Driving Miss Alice." She would take her to and from the office some of the time. They would swoop me up sometimes and we'd go over and feed the ducks and geese at the local pond after Alice's work day. They both were great explorers. And for me, that was just a delight. They loved to just kick up some red dust on those old country roads.
And there was plenty of it.
There was plenty of it, and if we got lost, all the better. It was more of an adventure.
You wrote that the reason she gave for the rich Southern tradition of storytelling was that we are Celtic and we are African. And I thought it very revealing that she identified with both, that was wholly Southern, the African and the descendant of Irish and Scots and Welsh in that region. You also got a lot of exposure to how Southern tradition is linked to the Christian church.
Yes.
To Christian belief, I should say.
Yes. One of the things Nell always said was, when it came to the Bible, give me the King James Version or let's not talk about it. But beyond that, she had said to me early on something that was really helpful, and that was, to understand Southerners, you need to understand their relationship to their church and to their property. And so she and Alice had all kinds of churches that they wanted me to visit. I felt these were homework assignments that it was fun to do and then go back and tell them about. But she said, you have to be sure you go to white churches, to black churches, to large congregations, to small ones. She took me one Sunday to a little Pentecostal church in the country near the community of Scratch Ankle.
Scratch Ankle. Now, how can you not become a writer of fluid prose when you grow up with places nearby like Scratch Ankle?
Scratch Ankle and Burnt Corn was another favorite one. And I quoted Eudora Welty in the book, actually, on that same topic that Nell discussed about the influence. I think whatever one's background was growing up, with the sounds of the Bible and sermons in your ear, I think whether a person is religious even or not, Eudora Welty talked about hearing the echoes of that kind of language in the writing of so many Southerners, and Nell discussed that as well.
We're talking with Maria Mills. Her chronicle, her memoir, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee, is now out in paperback. Maria Mills will speak at the Carter Center this evening at 7. We're going to listen to a little bit more of the score from the film version of To Kill a Mockingbird on WABE. Maria, would you talk about the importance of To Kill a Mockingbird, about the importance of the book in American culture?
It's astonishing the number of people who cite it not only as a favorite book, but as a reason that they became a lawyer, or became a writer, or became an English teacher. And I think people read it from different perspectives. There are universal themes, and there are also particular ones. I was speaking with someone the other day about the idea that besides the powerful themes regarding race and social justice, there are issues of gender in there, of addiction, of all kinds of things that a person can relate to their personal experience all these years later. Sadly, some of them are still more relevant than we wish they were. And I think she evoked childhood so powerfully that the hold that story has on so many of us, I think, is tied to that as well.
Well, Nell described Gregory Peck as delicious. It's difficult to think of a more delicious character than Scout herself. I mean, talk about not just an endearing little kid. This is one you just want to scoop up and adopt. Bring her home.
Although she could also be pretty scrappy, so you'd have to make sure that she was in agreement with that. But I think that sense of a young imagination and mind that's alive and taking in the world is powerful as well. And Alice, who was nearly 15 years older than Nell, in some ways as much mother as sister, was able to recall Nell as a child from the perspective of a young adult. And she remembered one Christmas, I believe it was, when their other sister, who was about to be married, was drawing most of the attention in the family, it seemed, to the young Nell, who, as Alice said, had her lip poked out about her birthday coming, or I believe it was Christmas coming, and all the attention being on Louise. But as Alice said, with a twinkle in her eye, the parents had planned a bicycle gift to surprise Nell. And she said she rode off, and we didn't see much of her for a while after that. I think she was an explorer even then.
Well, I think so many people must just presume that Mockingbird is so autobiographical that the author herself must have had a brother. They're surprised to learn there were two sisters. There was also a brother.
Yes, there were four siblings in that family, with Harper Lee being the youngest, Alice the oldest, and then a sister Louise and a brother Ed between them, each about 5 years apart in age.
So it was a close family, and that is something that you also got to see up close and personal. It's difficult to talk about the success of the book without talking about her relationship with Truman Capote, who was the model for little Dill, who is one of the funniest little kids in all of literature, I think. But grew
up funny looking too, according to Alice, as she said, who remembered him as a child and a playmate of Nell's. He was a funny looking little thing.
And they cast him that way.
And at the end of the day, she said, with the real life little boy Truman, their father, Mr. Lee, as he was known around town, would look up at the end of the day and say, "Has anyone put Truman out?" He liked to stay underfoot in the Lee household.
Why do you think he turned so nasty and fabricated those stories about his role in writing her book.
Well, it's interesting that two people who grew up in the same town and went on to be writers who were friends and childhood playmates would take such a different reaction to fame. I don't know that you could have two more different reactions. He courted it and relished it. And she, of course, kept it at an arm's length. One thing that Alice observed was she felt that Truman not winning the Pulitzer Prize was a source of jealousy for him because, of course, Nell had won the Pulitzer for To Kill a Mockingbird.
She was 24.
Pardon?
Wasn't she 24?
She was actually in her early 30s. Her father lived long enough to see her win the Pulitzer Prize, not long enough to see the movie come out, unfortunately, though he did meet Gregory Peck and reportedly was amused by the fuss around town when Hollywood came calling and the women in town suddenly felt the need to go to the wee diner where Gregory Peck had been spotted. I think drugs and alcohol certainly played a role in his difficulties. And one of the interesting things for me when I was living there was to watch the movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman as Truman Capote and Catherine Keener as Harper Lee with Nell Harper. We watched a videotape of that when those movies came out around 2005, a second one on the same topic as well that dealt with this period of time when To Kill a Mockingbird was at the publisher but not yet out, with the response that, as she said, no writer could be prepared for. So it was at the publisher, but it hadn't yet come out, and she accompanied her old pal Truman to Kansas to do research into what became In Cold Blood, his nonfiction narrative about farmhouse murders in Kansas.
And indeed, it's difficult to think of attitudes that could be more diametrically opposed towards fame, how he loved glamour and wealth and status, and she was quite content, thank you very much, to remain anonymous. We're talking with Maria Mills, the author of The Mockingbird Next Door, memoir of her life with Harper Lee. I'm Lois Reitzes. This is City Lights on WABE. You wrote that quiet work for equality was a hallmark of the Lee family. Racial injustice was not something it seemed they had to think very long about. It was part of their deep humanity. And yet, the book must have been a wake-up call for many Southerners at the time. Just a few years after Brown versus Board of Education, we were coming up on the most pivotal years of the civil rights movement. Did she encounter hatred for that?
There certainly was mixed opinion around town about the book. Plenty of people didn't appreciate that they felt it cast an unflattering light on their hometown. Other people have pointed out, though, that this was a portrait of people who were accepting segregation in many cases, the white residents of that town, and yet would go the extra mile for their neighbor, were in other respects compassionate people, and that part of the power of the novel is the mystery of how does that happen, even the mystery of the human heart, really. How is it that people can be compassionate in one regard and yet not more questioning of that system of segregation? They both were very generous in their charitable donations to the Methodist Church, to education.
Always anonymously.
As one of their friends said, Nell Harper has educated many people who have no idea she was their benefactor.
Now, if we could get back to your relationship with them, it sort of evolved. You went down there first just to write about Monroeville because of the Chicago connection to One City, One Book. One Book, One City.
One Book, One Chicago. You're
one
close.
One Book, One Chicago. Okay. Native. Sorry about that. But this friendship evolved, and pretty soon you became sort of the heiress apparent to their recollections of these remarkable lives they led. Were you pinching yourself that whole time?
I was surprised at every step that they were kind enough to meet with me in the first place, that they invited me on return visits for the newspaper story that ended up becoming a longer profile and ran the year after I met them, and then that they would welcome me next door. Alice was the keeper of the family history in many ways, and I think people were pleased that she was willing at that late date to share as many of those stories as she wanted to. I think everyone was aware that when she died, some of those stories would die with her if they weren't recorded. And Nell Harper would often say, let's ask Alice if they weren't sure of a story regarding their parents or grandparents or the town. Alice has such a memory for detail. And of course, remembered Nell Harper as a child, as a Girl Scouts age, from that perspective of someone who was nearly 15 years older. They both told stories with such a twinkle in their eye about their Aunt Alice, their mother's one sister, who was a character and would get into different scrapes, and like them was playful with language, which was one of the other pleasures of spending time with them.
Yes, and I think, again, part of that rich Southern reverence for language and all that it brings.
They were very different as sisters, and that was one of the things that interested me from the beginning. I mean, it's a treat as a journalist to have a chance to get to know someone in the context of family and their hometown and their circle of friends, but particularly with those two sisters whose personalities were quite different and yet whose lives were intertwined. They'd been dealing with the business of being Harper Lee for many years. As Harper Lee said early on, 40 years of this gets to be a bit much, and this had been far more than that, of course, by now.
That's the part that's difficult to understand. It's not difficult to understand why people want privacy. But given her values, to know the impact that her creation had on society, on posterity, I would have thought she'd be more welcoming and kinder to admirers.
Well, I think she was very generous in responding to correspondence for many years, in paying kindnesses to readers and teachers and others, usually quietly, but she would do that. I think she was less enthusiastic about people who felt entitled to something, whether they was sending a book and demanding a signature, maybe not including return postage even, or assuming that she would want to do whatever event they were suggesting. She was less welcoming of those. I think they both still were touched all those years later by what the book meant to so many people, and they would see it in the correspondence that was still streaming in. But she found it difficult, I think, for example, to know that so many of just chance encounters for her ended up being an anecdote forever, potentially, for people she was meeting. And when I was there, both of the Capote movies were in the works. The first major biography was also in the works. And I think that may be one of the reasons as well that she ended up participating in this more than I thought she might. There were things that she wanted. She wanted her perspective.
Yes, and it was a tribute to you to be taken into her innermost circle, because as she let you know in those uncertain terms, she had no respect for your profession.
She called me a contradiction in terms, a class act journalist, and I remember thinking, thank you, I think. She had definitely had a mixed experience with journalists over the years.
Talking with Maria Mills about The Mockingbird Next Door, her memoir of Harper Lee. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. Do you think it was a decades-long case of writer's block, or do you think she said all she had to say?
Well, that was one of the comments she made when talking about why she hadn't published another book, that she had said what she had to say in Mockingbird and wouldn't say it again. And the other thing she told a friend on that topic was that she wouldn't go through all that publicity again for all the money in the world. She had worked over the years on different things, including in the 1980s on a nonfiction project, as well as fiction. And of course, now there is a second book.
In the news. It was really the first book, or sort of.
People have described it variously as a prequel and a sequel.
Yes, so that comes out in about a month, and it will be interesting. I was hoping maybe you would talk, after that comes out, you might talk about it again?
Oh, I would love to.
Oh, and
I would love to.
Love to have you. Maria, there must have been devastation for you when, after your memoir was released, there was a statement that you don't even know if it actually came from Nell, but she had suffered a severe stroke, was probably in dementia, if in fact the statement came from her, but she said she had no recollection of ever giving you permission to write any of this.
Fortunately, Alice was still practicing law at that time, and I asked her how she wanted to handle that. They both had been so generous with their time and their insights. And Alice issued a statement of her own saying that the other had gone out without her knowledge and didn't reflect her feelings or those of her sister. And she also wrote in a page-long handwritten fax that Nell Harper would sign anything put in front of her by someone in whom she had confidence. That had been typed up and brought over to her, and that Nell had no memory of signing that. So,
did you weep?
It was difficult. I was concerned with wanting to respect Alice's wishes and Nell's as I had understood them to be. And so I was, when that happened, I was really focused on speaking with Alice about what was the best way to handle it.
Mm.
I have such gratitude and affection for both of them, and I think this book ends up being a chronicle of the last chapter of life as they knew it, all those years when both were still able to live at home. It felt like they would be in those routines forever, but of course, no one ever is.
I'm glad to know that you were able to maintain perspective. In the epilogue, you say, to be invited into their world is to be invited behind the curtain of Nell's beautiful and enduring novel. Maria Mills, thank you for letting us go behind that curtain.
Oh, thank you so much. Great to talk with you.
It's been a pleasure. Maria Mills will speak at the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library and Museum tonight at 7 o'clock. The event is free. This interview, along with more information, will be posted shortly at wabe.org/citylights. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.